Mind wandering? Marku Lindroos, I pass by the Shakespeare and Company bookstore at the edge of the Latin Quarter in the flush of a blushing morning. I've always wanted to visit, but it's permanently overcrowded. I can't bring myself to step inside just to feed my writer's soul, a soul stained by life and prone to adventuring in its own associations. A new day, and everything outside is drenched. A night of continuous rain has washed the streets of Paris, sweeping away the stench of urine, dog waste, and rotting food scraps. It has watered the park trees, budding with a fresh green, and the daffodils pushing proudly up through the soil. Paris is in spring bloom, like a teenage girl. A certain restlessness is visible everywhere. People are driven by instinctual urges that throw life off balance once more, making the light brighter and the shadows deeper. From the early hours, the sounds of hammers and jackhammers echo from every direction, and there isn't a single hotel without paint-splattered workmen loitering out front with their gear. It is spring. I walk toward Les Halles and onward to Rue Saint-Denis, where prostitutes are already idling in the doorways of shabby hotels this morning. Some are old and heavy set. The youngest come, without exception, from Africa or Asia. What they all have in common is tacky, revealing clothes and exaggerated smudged makeup. An unvarnished sexuality vibrates in the air like molecules rising from hot asphalt. As I pass, my attention is caught by a beautifully aged French woman holding a small dog in her arms, her eyes gentle. I am certain she has plenty of regulars, all in love with her for the exact same reason. I slow my pace beside her, if only I had the courage. She smiles with her eyes, as if reading my thoughts, and whispers in a voice, raspy from cigarettes, €100. The illusion vanishes. Love is not a commodity to me in that way, and a gap in a woman's teeth, smashed in by some angry fist, is not sexy. Reading the shift in my expression from infatuation to revulsion, she sighs and turns away. Tomorrow, I will take a different route. At the top of the street, I turn toward the old opera house, intending to see Chagall's magnificent ceiling painting, which I've previously known only from pictures. My legs are already aching. Paris is devilishly huge, shrunk and trivialized by the map in my hands, tricking me into walking further. The culprit is my desire to see and experience it all. A packed metro and changing trains just isn't the same. Stopping at cafes for a glass of wine and a bite of baguette keeps me oriented, and my lifted spirits make up for the increasing clumsiness of my steps. In front of the opera house, a Romani woman lies on a dirty blanket with a hungry, wailing baby before her, and another on the way inside her swollen belly. She begs with her hands clasped in prayer, a cliché image of the Virgin Mary by her side. On a nearby bench sits a man with an attack dog between his knees, watching to ensure she doesn't secretly hide any arms in her rags. Hesitantly, I drop a coin into a cigar box containing a few cents left as seed money. Otherwise, I would have spent the rest of the day dwelling on my own hard-hearted stinginess. The distress is real. The opulence of the opera house is a cruel contrast to the misery outside, but Chagall's ceiling painting somehow blurs that contrast in my mind. Head tilted back, I stare at the ceiling, at its joyful colors and whimsical figures, and the surrounding grandeur loses some of its gaudy air, as if melting into the essence of Paris. Coming outside, I give the begging woman a €5 note, for she is now nursing her child at a sagging breast. At the street corner, I glance back and see the man with the leashed dog emptying the cigar box. The fire to right kindled by Shakespeare and company, has begun to find its substance.